Hey there, curious minds, and welcome back to the Deep Dive. This is where we cut through the noise, unpack complex topics, and hopefully turn them into those really satisfying aha moments for you. Today, we're diving headfirst into an industry you might not immediately think of as, well, a hotbed of disruption: insurance. But trust me, this deep dive, it's going to be far from dry. We're shining a spotlight on a fascinating Norwegian non-life insurance company. It's called Protector Forsikring ASA, trading on the Oslo Stock Exchange as PROT.OL. We've taken a stack of sources for you, everything from really in-depth investment analyses, detailed company reports, right through to broader industry insights are missing today. To extract the most important nuggets of knowledge, we want to understand Protector's truly unique strategy and really uncover what makes them tick. From their financial health to the specific risks they navigate, you're going to get a shortcut. A shortcut to understanding a very intriguing player that actually calls itself the challenger in the European insurance market. Think of it as maybe a blueprint for how a relatively young company can thrive in an industry that's well dominated by giants.
That's precisely right. What's truly fascinating here is observing how a company can not only survive, but actually disrupt. Disrupt a seemingly traditional, mature, and often, let's be honest, quite conservative industry. Protector Forsikring isn't just another insurer selling policies. No. They've meticulously built a business model, one designed to directly challenge those larger, more established players. We're going to explore how they achieve a rather ambitious dual goal. Not just cost leadership, but also quality leadership.
Look, this isn't just some marketing slogan they throw around. It's fundamental to their growth, their profitability, and especially their ability to protect their margins, particularly in today's hardening market.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit. Because you hear insurance and maybe you think, slow, steady, maybe a bit burdened by history. Imagine an industry often burdened by decades of legacy IT systems, intricate bureaucracies, and a certain old school way of doing things. Protector just came in with a remarkably fresh, agile approach. So where do we begin our journey into understanding this challenger's blueprint? How do they truly stand out? Let's start right at the beginning. Who is Protector Forsikring? Okay, so they were established in Norway back in 2004, listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange in 2007, and their core identity, you really can't miss it, it's the challenger. Like you said, it's not just a tagline they stick on reports, it feels like it's genuinely the heart of their entire strategy. They aim to disrupt established, slower-moving incumbents, and they do that by relentlessly focusing on, well, superior efficiency and exceptional service quality. But what does this challenger identity actually mean for their day-to-day operations, their strategic choices? Beyond just being a catchy phrase, how does it play out?
That raises a really important question, doesn't it? How do you effectively challenge giants, especially in a highly concentrated, mature market like insurance? Their blueprint is, well, it's meticulously built on that dual strategic target. Cost leadership and quality leadership. Think of it as a powerful, self-reinforcing, virtuous cycle. It feeds itself. Their relentless cost discipline, which we'll definitely delve into, allows them to offer highly attractive pricing. Attractive pricing to their distribution partners, the brokers. This competitive pricing naturally draws in business. That makes sense. But that's only half the equation, right? It's then coupled with exceptionally high quality service. And that's particularly evident in their claims handling. That's the moment of truth for any insured client, isn't it? This quality builds deep loyalty, helps them retain clients year after year. Their stated goal is to leverage this unique combination into profitable growth and ultimately to achieve a top three market position in their chosen segments. It's a very intentional two-pronged attack on the traditional, often slower-moving insurance model.
So it's about being incredibly lean and efficient, but without sacrificing the quality that keeps customers happy and brokers loyal. It's like being, I don't know, a high-performance athlete who's also exceptionally polite and responsive. And a key part of that lean structure seems to stem from their age, right? Being founded in the 21st century must have given them a unique advantage over some of the much older players.
Derija. This is a critical point. You've hit on something really important there. Many incumbents in the insurance industry are literally burdened. Burdened by legacy IT systems that are decades old, sometimes patched together over years. Complex organizational structures, often bureaucratic processes that have accumulated over generations. Think of it like patching up an old house with new additions. It just gets heavier, less efficient over time. Protector, on the other hand, started with a clean slate, a blank canvas. They built their systems and processes from the ground up, purpose-built, avoiding those old-school inefficiencies and the, frankly, huge costs associated with maintaining outdated infrastructure. This greenfield approach provides them with a fundamental structural cost advantage. And that's a key tenet of their equity story, which is something they emphasize heavily in all their investor communications. It's not just a small saving here or there. It's foundational to their ability to deliver that cost leadership. And we'll see this come up again and again as we connect this to the bigger picture. Their overall financial performance, their competitive edge, it all ties back.
Now, let's talk about what kind of insurance they actually provide. What risks are they covering? We know it's non-life or property and casualty, P&C insurance, as it's often called. And they focus on two primary markets, commercial, targeting large and medium-sized companies, and perhaps most interestingly, the public sector. Can you tell us more about their specific focus areas here? That seems quite specialized.
The public sector is absolutely a cornerstone for them. It's where they've truly achieved a dominant market position. Which is quite remarkable, actually, given their size relative to the huge incumbents. They've become the largest insurer of municipalities in Scandinavia. We're talking a portfolio covering over 600 local governments. And this isn't just about insuring town halls. It's a diverse portfolio. Property, liability, motor fleets, accident insurance for public employees. It's broad. And their reach goes even further. In the UK, a market renowned for its fierce competition, they've rapidly ascended to become a top three player in public sector and social housing, serving over 420 clients there, including 181 local authorities and 170 housing associations. This deep expertise and significant market share in such specialized niches represent a profound competitive strength. It gives them economies of scale in underwriting, highly specific knowledge of those risks, and builds long-term, often very sticky client relationships that are hard for competitors to just come in and replicate. These clients often value stability and proven service quality over simply the lowest price, you know, which creates a more predictable, stable revenue stream for Protector.
That's an impressive reach and a really smart strategic choice focusing like that. And it's clearly not just confined to Norway anymore. They've systematically expanded their geographic footprint. That expansion really tells a story of ambitious, planned growth. Started in Norway 2004, then Sweden 2011, Denmark 2012, then a significant leap into both the UK and Finland in 2016. And here's where it gets really interesting, especially if you're thinking about future growth. A new branch in France is planned. They're set to begin quoting in Q3 2024 for a formal launch in 2025. This systematic strategy has successfully diversified their premium base away from just Norway. By year-end 2023, the UK alone made up 41% of their gross written premiums. That's huge. Sweden, 24%, Norway down to 19%, Denmark, 13%, Finland, 3%. That means the majority of their business, well over half, is now generated outside their home market. That's a massive transformation in less than two decades.
And what's truly fascinating here, and maybe underappreciated, is the profitable scaling of their UK business. The UK is, as you know, a highly competitive market, structurally different compared to the Nordics. It has its own unique legal system, regulatory landscape, distribution dynamics. Yet Protector has not just survived there, they've thrived. They've become a major player in their niches. Their success in the UK serves as a really powerful proof of concept, proof that Protector's Challenger model is portable. It travels well. It fundamentally de-risks their future expansion plans, like the upcoming entry into France. And it lends significant credibility to their core strategy. That future growth will increasingly come from markets outside of Norway. It demonstrates their model isn't just some local Norwegian anomaly. It's robust, it's adaptable, and it can be successfully replicated in diverse European markets. This also, crucially, reduces their concentration risk to any single market or economy.
So how do they actually get their products to the customers? How do they sell? They don't have their own internal sales force like some of the big guys, which sounds like another piece of that cost leadership puzzle, right?
Yeah,
precisely. Their go-to-market strategy is unwavering and deliberately exclusive. They distribute solely through carefully selected insurance brokers and agents. This is a conscious strategic decision. It avoids the immense high fixed costs associated with building and maintaining a large direct sales force. Their value proposition to these critical partners, the brokers, is meticulously cultivated. They promise to be easy to do business with, commercially attractive, and trustworthy. And that commitment, it's actually reinforced by formal service level agreements, SLAs. These SLAs define clear performance expectations, things like, quote, turnaround times, claims handling efficiency metrics. This approach creates a symbiotic relationship. It's mutually beneficial. It grants Protector incredibly efficient market access by leveraging the existing trusted relationships between brokers and their clients. While allowing Protector to maintain its crucial cost advantage, it's a win-win that fosters loyalty right across the entire value chain, from Protector to the broker to the end client.
That certainly makes sense for cost efficiency. Total sense. And on the underwriting side, which is, let's face it, the core of any insurance business, They have a strict profitability target, don't they? It sounds like they don't just chase premium volume at any cost. There's discipline there.
Absolutely not. No chasing unprofitable business here. Their underwriting philosophy is anchored by a strict long-term profitability target. They aim for a net combined ratio below 91%. Now, for our listeners, the combined ratio is essentially the key measure of an insurer's underwriting profit. It combines claims, costs, and operating expenses, then divides by the premium income. So a ratio below 100% means they're making an underwriting profit before any investment income kicks in. Aiming for consistently below 91% is actually quite ambitious in this industry, and it enforces disciplined risk selection and pricing across all markets they operate in, no exceptions. And claims handling, which they aptly call the moment of truth for an insurer.
Right, because that's when the customer really finds out if the policy is worth anything.
Exactly. That's managed almost entirely in-house. A significant portion of their operational workforce, consistently around 46-47% in recent years, are dedicated claims staff. This high proportion directly reflects its strategic importance. For both rigorous cost control, avoiding outsourcing fees, closely managing the process, and for delivering a superior customer experience, which underpins their quality leadership claim and helps protect those valuable long-term client relationships.
Okay, let's unpack this further, because that focus on in-house operations and efficiency, it echoes back to what you mentioned about their modern systems earlier. This leads us directly to their technology. It sounds like a huge and maybe potentially underestimated advantage for them.
Indeed, it really is. In an industry where outsourcing IT is incredibly common, often seen as a way to cut costs or maybe gain access to specialized skills, Protector takes a very different yet highly effective approach. They develop, maintain, and operate all their core systems with a dedicated in-house IT team. Over 40 specialists. Think of the difference. Buying an off-the-shelf software package that might do 80% of what you need, forcing you to adapt your processes around the software, versus building bespoke software tailored exactly to your unique, efficient processes. This internal capability gives them a very short time to market for innovations. Tremendous agility. They can quickly adapt to evolving business needs, new regulatory requirements like IFRS 17 or competitive pressures, and the financial benefit. It's stark. Quite remarkable, actually. Their internal IT costs are approximately 1% of premiums. 1%. Compare that to an industry standard that often exceeds 3%, maybe even 5% for some older incumbents wrestling with those creaking legacy systems.
Yeah, that's a huge difference.
It is. This isn't just a small saving. This structural cost advantage is foundational to their entire business model. It allows them to consistently maintain that cost leadership we discussed, and it lets them pass on some of those savings in competitive pricing, helping them protect margins even while being attractive to clients.
So, okay, they've got this impressive challenger blueprint, lean, mean, tech savvy, but they're not operating in a vacuum, are they? They're up against some formidable opponents in pretty tough markets. The Nordic P&C insurance landscape, for instance, is well known for being mature and highly concentrated. What does that mean for Protector, practically speaking? How does that concentration affect them?
It means they operate within oligopolies. That's the textbook definition. Markets where a few very large players collectively dominate. Market share is heavily consolidated among these entrenched incumbents, which makes it a very challenging environment for newcomers or smaller players like Protector was to gain traction. Just to give you some context on this concentration, in Sweden, the four largest insurers write about 81% of all premiums.
81%.
Yeah. In Norway, it's around 76%, Denmark about 61%, and Finland, a staggering 91%.
Wow.
Dominant competitors across the region include well-known household names, Tryg, if PNC, which is part of the big Sampo Group, Jij & Seidich. These are not easy markets to break into or gain share in. They are intensely competitive, often with strong brand loyalty built over decades and extensive distribution networks that are hard to replicate quickly.
And beyond just the competitive landscape, the industry as a whole has been facing some serious macroeconomic headwinds lately, hasn't it? Things that put pressure on pretty much everyone's profitability.
Absolutely. It's been a tough few years for the industry globally. We've seen a trend of market consolidation, particularly noticeable in Denmark, where larger players have snapped up smaller ones. On top of that, there's been persistently high claims cost inflation right across Europe, largely driven by global supply chain disruptions. Think about the cost of car parts or building materials for property repairs. Those have soared, and rising labor costs for skilled repair technicians. And then there's the undeniable impact of climate change, leading to an increasing frequency and severity of weather-related events. Storm Hans in 2023 was a big one, causing significant damage and claims in Norway and Sweden. These combined pressures on profitability have pushed the market into what insurers call a hardening phase.
Hardening phase. What does that mean exactly?
It means insurers are generally less focused on competing aggressively on price to gain market share. Instead, they're implementing broad-based price increases across their portfolios. Why? To protect their underwriting margins from being eroded by these rising costs. This is a crucial context for Protector strategy. They need to protect their own margins in this environment, too.
Okay, given all those challenges, the tough competition, the inflation, the weather events, what then is Protector's main differentiator? How do they truly stand out and compete effectively against these deeply entrenched giants, especially in a hardening market?
Their primary differentiator is unequivocally their superior cost structure. That's the bedrock. And this isn't just an internal claim or marketing spin. An independent analysis back in 2020 explicitly noted that Protector possesses the far best cost ratio in the industry. End quote. Now, while incumbents like Tryg and If are significantly larger in terms of premium volume and overall scale, they're often burdened by those higher legacy costs. The old IT systems, the complex, multi-layered organizational structures, established distribution channels that have accumulated over decades, which aren't always the most efficient. This traditional approach is often described, maybe a bit unkindly, as the conservative old-school way, often aiming for modest, low single-digit growth, prioritizing stability, perhaps over agility. Protector, by contrast, starts from a much leaner, more modern, and more agile base. This allows them to operate at a fundamentally lower cost per policy written.
But Protector has been growing much, much faster than those modest, low single-digit rates you mentioned, right? What's the secret? How are they achieving these sustained market share gains in such a competitive environment? It seems counterintuitive.
Yes, dramatically faster. Their consistently high growth rate is really a testament to the effectiveness of their challenger model. For example, they achieved a remarkable 24% premium compound annual growth rate CAGR over the decade from 2009 to 2019.
24% CAGR.
For 10 years. And even more recently, revenue grew a strong 22.17% year over year. This indicates significant and sustained market share gains. And importantly, these gains are often coming directly at the expense of those larger, perhaps less nimble, incumbents. They've grown entirely organically, remember. From a startup to a formidable company with over NOK $10.4 billion in gross written premiums by 2023. Their secret. It's leveraging that cost advantage. It allows them to offer attractive terms, but coupled with a service quality that satisfies brokers and clients. This lets them pick off profitable business segments from competitors who simply can't match their efficiency. This allows them to effectively protect and even grow their own margins, even in this hardening market, because they have that cost buffer.
Okay, here's where it really gets interesting for us as listeners, especially when we think about sustainable business advantages. We often talk about moats in business, those durable competitive advantages that protect a company's profit and market share over the long term. What are Protector's specific moats in this high barrier to entry insurance market?
Right, and barriers to entry are indeed very high in the insurance sector. It's not an easy industry to just jump into. You need substantial capital, regulatory capital under Solvency II rules. You need a trusted brand that inspires confidence, particularly when you're handling large sums of money and promising future security. You need deep relationships with broker networks, as they often control access to the clients. And you need sophisticated data analytics and IT infrastructure to price risk accurately and operate efficiently. Within this challenging context, Protector has, I think, cultivated three key moats that really set them apart and protect their business model. First, their structural cost advantage. This is arguably their most durable moat. It's hard to replicate. It stems directly from their lean, performance-oriented culture and those modern in-house IT systems we talked about, built without any legacy constraints. Competitors can't easily copy this because it would require a complete, expensive, and hugely disruptive overhaul of their existing infrastructure.
Right. Ripping out the old stuff is painful.
Exactly. Second, broker relationships. Their unwavering, exclusive focus on the broker channel has fostered incredibly deep, loyal relationships. They are known in the broker community for being easy to work with, responsive, and commercially attractive, reinforced by those SLAs. For a competitor, especially one maybe trying to balance direct sales with broker sales, to peel away this loyalty is incredibly difficult. It's built on years of consistent service and trust, not just today's price. And third, niche dominance. Their deep focus and dominant market share in the public sector across multiple countries is a real strength. It gives them economies of scale in that specific area, highly specialized underwriting expertise for public sector risks, and a strong brand reputation within that particular, often quite sticky, segment. Public sector contracts are often long-term, renewed based on performance and trust, not solely the lowest bid. This provides a stable base for their business.
And the structural cost leadership, this first moat, it gives them pricing power, doesn't it? Even in a hardening market where everyone else is trying to push prices up just to survive.
Precisely. Their pricing power is a direct function of their cost leadership. It gives them options. Because they operate so much more efficiently, they have greater flexibility in how they price. They can price competitively enough to win business from incumbents, even if they're not always the absolute rock-bottom cheapest option, while still achieving their target profit margins because their cost base is lower. This is crucial in a hardening market where protecting margins is absolutely paramount for everyone. And look, this isn't just theoretical. During the recent inflationary period, Protector successfully implemented significant price increases across their portfolio, often at or even above the general market rates. This demonstrated both genuine pricing power, their ability to make price increases stick, and a strong commitment to underwriting discipline. They weren't just chasing unprofitable growth by undercutting everyone. They used their efficiency strategically, positioning themselves to be selective about the risks they take and the prices they charge. This ultimately strengthens their market position and protects their long-term profitability. #tag a deep dive into financial health and performance.
Okay, let's switch gears a bit and really talk numbers. You've provided a really comprehensive review of Protector's financial statements covering 2019 right through to 2023. What's the big picture here? What story do these figures tell us about their journey and their current financial health?
Well, if we connect this data to the bigger picture strategy we've been discussing, the financials reveal a company that has successfully executed a remarkable turnaround in its core underwriting profitability, all while consistently delivering strong top-line growth and superior returns on equity. It's really a story of strategic execution translating directly into financial strength. You can see it clearly in the numbers. For instance, their gross premiums written, which is a key measure of an insurer's top-line size, that surged from NOK 5,100 million back in 2019 to a massive NOK 10,423 million in 2023.
Wow, basically doubled in just 4 years.
Effectively doubled. Even more impressively, their net underwriting result, that's the profit from their core insurance activities, pricing risk, and paying claims. That dramatically turned around from a loss of negative 163 million NOK in 2019 to a substantial profit of 1,080 million NOK in 2023.
Huge swing.
Massive swing. And their overall profit before tax mirrored this, dramatically shifting from negative 72 million in 2019 to a whopping 1,934 million in 2023. These numbers show a powerful trajectory. Not just growth, but increasingly profitable growth, showcasing their ability to protect those margins effectively as they scale.
That's quite a transformation, going from a loss to significant profit like that. But the net combined ratio, you mentioned it earlier, it's often seen as the single most critical metric for judging an insurer's core performance, isn't it? How does Protector fare on that front?
It absolutely is. The net combined ratio is the ultimate indicator of an insurer's underwriting profitability and operational efficiency. It strips out investment income. After that challenging 2019, where they posted a net combined ratio of 103.8%, which essentially means they were losing 3.8 for every krone of premium collected on their core underwriting activities. Not good.
Definitely not sustainable.
No. They executed a very strong turnaround. Very effective. They posted significantly improved ratios in the following years. 94.8% in 2020, a really strong 87.3% in 2021, then 88.9% in 2022, and 88.5% in 2023. And for the full year 2024, preliminary numbers show an even better 88.1%.
Consistently below 90%.
Consistently. And these results are consistently better than their own strict long-term target of below 91%. Look, this isn't just luck or a one-off. It's a powerful testament to their disciplined risk selection, their efficient claims handling we talked about, and that strong underlying cost management driven by their tech and structure. In today's hardening market, maintaining a combined ratio consistently below 90% is a clear indicator of superior operational effectiveness and strong margin protection compared to many peers.
Okay, if we drill down a bit further and look at the geographic breakdown of their performance, are all the regions performing equally well, or do we see some variations across the different countries they operate in?
That's a good question. While the aggregate performance is undeniably strong, the geographic breakdown does reveal some variations, which is pretty natural for a diversified international insurer. You expect some ups and downs. The UK, for instance, has been a particularly strong performer recently. Its combined ratio improved to an excellent 82.4% in 2023. That really showcases the deep success and profitability of their model in that highly competitive market. In contrast, Norway's performance, their home market, deteriorated significantly in 2023, ending up at 97.1%.
Ouch. Close to 100%.
Yeah, not great. This was impacted by a confluence of factors.
Right.
Those notable natural peril events we mentioned, like Storm Hans hitting hard, and also poor results specifically in motor insurance, which is a segment facing industry-wide challenges with repair costs. So this highlights both the value of the diversification of their earnings base. Strong performance in the UK can offset temporary weakness in Norway. But it also flags areas of relative weakness, like Norwegian Motor, that need close monitoring and active management to bring them back in line with overall profitability targets.
And what about their reserves? The money they set aside for future claims. Are they being conservative in their estimates, maybe building up hidden buffers, or perhaps more aggressive? This can be a really tricky area for investors to assess from the outside.
It's notoriously opaque, you're right. Protector practices what's called a best estimate reserving practice. Their long-term goal for runoff, which is the positive or negative development of prior year loss reserves as claims actually get paid out, is to be 0% over time. Essentially, they aim for their initial estimates for future claims cost to be spot on, neither overly conservative, which would depress current profits, nor overly optimistic or aggressive, which would flatter current profits but store problems for the future.
So aiming for accuracy.
That's exactly. However, in the real world, predicting the future is hard, especially for long-tail claims. So, actual results show some expected volatility around that zero target. They had runoff losses of 0.3% in 2021, meaning prior reserves were slightly too low, then gains of 2.3% in 2022, meaning prior reserves were a bit too high, followed by losses again of 0.3% in 2023, and finally gains of 0.9% in 2024. This volatility is inherent in insurance reserving, particularly with inflation uncertainty and long-tail liability lines, where claims can take many, many years to fully settle. But it's a key metric for investors to monitor closely. Any consistent trend of large gains or losses could signal underlying issues with their initial reserving conservatism or aggression. It impacts the quality of reported earnings and could pose a risk to future margins if they've been consistently under-reserving.
Let's talk about how they invest the premiums they collect, you know, the float they hold before claims are paid out. Their investment portfolio seems a bit different from what you might expect from a typical conservative insurer. It indicates perhaps a more active, maybe more aggressive approach.
That's right. Protector operates a noticeably more aggressive and opportunistic investment portfolio than is typical for most Nordic insurers. Many insurers in the region primarily aim for stable, predictable, low-volatility income, often heavily weighted towards government bonds, trying to match the duration of their liabilities. Protector, however, explicitly views its investment activities as a distinct profit center, not just a stable income stream to support the underwriting side. At year-end 2023, their asset allocation was 16.0% equities and 84.0% fixed income.
16% equities sounds quite high for a P&C insurer.
It is relatively high. While 84% fixed income sounds conservative on the surface, that 16% in equities is a significant allocation for a non-life carrier compared to many peers. And the credit rating agency AM Best has explicitly noted this relatively high allocation to equities and non-rated bonds as a source of potential earnings volatility in their assessments. This strategy leads to investment returns that are a significant, but often quite volatile, contributor to overall earnings. For example, they achieved a strong 7.9% investment return in 2023 when markets were generally good, but that compares to a much more muted 3.4% in 2022 during tougher market conditions. This really highlights their dual-engine model. You've got a highly stable and efficient underwriting engine designed to consistently generate strong, predictable profits from the core business, which then acts as a kind of ballast, providing a strong capital base that can absorb the greater fluctuations from a more aggressive, potentially higher return, but definitely higher volatility investment engine. It's worth noting, the market often capitalizes these more volatile investment earnings at a lower multiple than the stable underwriting profits, reflecting that increased risk profile.
Finally, on financials, what about their balance sheet strength, their overall capital position? How well are they capitalized to absorb unexpected shocks and support that ambitious future growth we talked about?
Protector maintains a very strong capital position, which is absolutely crucial for any insurer's stability and long-term prospects. This provides a significant buffer against unexpected losses, like a major catastrophe event, and also gives them ample capacity for future growth without having to frequently tap equity markets for more cash. Their solvency the second ratio, that's the key regulatory measure of capital adequacy, comparing their eligible capital to their required capital, stood at 195% at year-end 2022. It maintained that level at 195% at year-end 2023 and was just slightly lower at 193% at year-end 2024.
Still very high.
Very high indeed. This is comfortably above their own internal target of keeping it greater than 150% and well in excess of the regulatory minimum requirement of 100%. To give you a sense, a ratio around 150% is generally considered healthy by regulators and rating agencies. Being up near 195% indicates a substantial capital buffer. They also actively manage their capital structure using instruments like Tier 2 and restricted Tier 1 bonds to optimize their cost of capital, ensuring efficient funding. And financial leverage remains moderate. Their debt-to-equity ratio was 0.35 at year-end 2024, demonstrating prudent financial management. They aren't over-leveraged. This strong capital base is a key component of their overall financial strength. It offers resilience against market shocks and underpins their ambitious growth plans, helping them protect their solvency alongside protecting their underwriting margins.
So, okay, they're financially sound, strong capital. They've shown this impressive turnaround in profitability. But how has all this discipline and strategic execution translated into actual sustained growth over time? What's their track record really been like in terms of getting bigger?
Protector has a truly formidable track record of rapid and crucially profitable organic growth. It's genuinely impressive for a company operating in such a mature industry. Their gross written premiums surged from NOK 1.2 billion back in 2011 to NOK 10.4 billion by 2023.
Wow, nearly tenfold growth in just over a decade.
Exactly. That demonstrates over a decade of consistent and successful market share gains. More recently, as we mentioned, their revenue grew a strong 22.17% year over year. And importantly, this expansion has been achieved entirely organically, not through expensive and often integration-challenging acquisitions, which is how many larger insurers grow. This organic growth is a clear mark of a strong internal growth engine and the effective replication of their business model. It means they're not just buying growth, they're earning it by winning clients away from competitors year after year.
So they're literally, as you put it before, copying a winning formula into new markets, like you mentioned with their UK success. How does that process work? What makes it so effective for them to just pick up their model and plant it somewhere else?
Precisely. The company's strategy is explicitly to replicate its proven efficient business model in new markets. They aren't reinventing the wheel each time. They've effectively developed a playbook for entering a new country. Identify attractive public sector or commercial niches where they feel their model gives them an edge. Leverage those broker relationships, find the right partners who value their proposition, and then deploy their lean, efficient in-house IT systems rapidly. The successful scaling of operations in the UK is the most prominent example of this playbook in action. It served as a powerful validation of their strategy, proving that their specific blend of cost and quality leadership isn't confined just to the familiar Nordic environment. This success significantly de-risks future market entries, like their planned expansion into the large French market. Furthermore, their in-house digital capabilities are a critical enabler of this rapid, repeatable growth. By controlling their core technology platforms, they can rapidly deploy their systems into new geographies. They can adapt them efficiently to local market needs, integrate local regulations quickly, all while maintaining their crucial cost advantage, even during periods of rapid expansion and market entry. This rapid deployment capability is a significant competitive edge over incumbents who might need years, literally years, to adapt their complex legacy systems for a new market entry. Hashtag TagTechHead capital discipline and shareholder value creation.
Okay, so they're growing fast, they're profitable, but beyond just growth, how do they manage their capital? And how do they ensure robust returns for their shareholders? Because ultimately, that's what many of our listeners are looking for in a well-managed company. They want to see that value creation.
Right. Growth is great, but capital discipline is key for long-term value. Management adheres to a very disciplined capital allocation framework. It clearly prioritizes funding that profitable growth we've discussed while simultaneously ensuring robust returns back to shareholders. It's a balance. They have a clearly articulated dividend policy, which provides predictability for investors. They aim to distribute between 20% and 80% of annual profits as dividends, provided, of course, that their solvency margin remains above that healthy 150% threshold we talked about. This flexibility is important. It allows them to retain capital for attractive growth opportunities when they arise, but also ensures they reward shareholders consistently when conditions are strong and capital levels are high. And if the solvency margin gets really strong and exceeds 200%, the board has explicitly stated its intention to return that surplus capital, either via special one-off dividends or through share buybacks. For example, in 2024, they paid out a total of NOK 742 million in dividends. And for the fiscal year 2023, the total dividend per share was NOK 10.00 MO. This indicates a strong and consistent commitment to returning cash to shareholders.
So they're not just relying on regular dividends, but also using share buybacks as another tool in their capital management toolkit.
Yes, exactly. The board holds authorization from the annual general meeting to repurchase up to 10% of the company's outstanding shares. This provides an additional, flexible tool for returning capital to shareholders. It's not always about dividends. It allows them to adjust their capital return strategy based on market conditions and their internal capital needs at any given time. For instance, if the share price appears particularly undervalued in the market, or if they simply have excess capital beyond what's needed for organic growth and regular dividends, buybacks can be a very efficient way to enhance shareholder value by reducing the share count and boosting earnings per share. As of year-end 2023, for example, they held just under 60,000 of their own shares in treasury as a result of previous buyback activity. It's all part of a comprehensive strategy to manage their strong capital position efficiently and for optimal shareholder benefit.
Okay, here's where it really gets interesting for shareholders, I think. Because all this talk about profitable growth, efficiency, smart capital allocation, it leads to one key metric that really encapsulates performance, return on equity or ROE. And Protector's ROE is, frankly, impressive. It really stands out.
It's truly a hallmark of their financial performance. It's a key reason for their significant investor appeal and that premium valuation we'll discuss later. ROE, as you know, measures how much profit a company generates for each unit, each krone, shareholder equity invested in the business. It's a core measure of profitability and capital efficiency. They delivered an ROE of 31.6% in 2024.
Over 30%.
Yeah. And the average ROE over the past 5 years has been approximately 23%. This significantly exceeds their own long-term financial objective of achieving an ROE greater than 20%. Now, to put that into perspective for you, generating over 20% ROE consistently is considered world-class performance for most industries. And it's especially challenging for a financial services company like an insurer, which is typically quite capital-intensive. This superior capital efficiency, their ability to generate exceptionally high profits from the equity invested in the business, is a primary driver of long-term value creation for shareholders. It's a critical component of what makes them appear to be a superior compounder of capital in the eyes of many investors. It allows them to grow their earnings per share rapidly over time, often without needing continuous new capital injections from the market, which avoids diluting existing shareholders. #tag can temper headwinds and challenges 2022-2024.
Okay, even with all this impressive strength, the stellar ROE, the strategic execution, no company operates in a vacuum, right? The macroeconomic and industry landscapes are constantly shifting, throwing up new challenges. What are the current headwinds and specific challenges Protector is facing right now? Things that could potentially impact their ability to maintain that strong performance and protect those margins.
You're absolutely right. No company is immune. And if we connect this back to the bigger picture, they're definitely navigating a challenging operating environment at the moment. It's driven by a combination of broad macroeconomic pressures and specific insurance industry headwinds, particularly when it comes to protecting those hard-won underwriting margins. First, let's talk inflation. Persistently high inflation across Europe directly impacts claims costs. It's a major headache for all insurers. Think about the surging costs of spare parts for cars, the rising prices of building materials for property repairs, the increasing wages for skilled labor needed for those repairs. All of these factors mean that when a claim comes in, the cost to settle it is significantly higher than it might have been just a year or two ago. Protector, like its peers, has had to respond with aggressive, broad-based price increases across its portfolio to try and counter this trend and protect its underwriting margins.
Passing those costs on.
Trying to, yes. Second, interest rates. The sharp rise in central bank rates over the last couple of years is really a double-edged sword for an insurer. On the one hand, it clearly boosts investment income from their substantial floating rate fixed income portfolio. That's the obvious benefit, especially given their more opportunistic investment strategy, more income. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it creates unrealized losses on existing fixed rate bond holdings bought when rates were lower. And crucially, it impacts the discount rates applied to their long-term liabilities under the new IFRS 17 accounting standard.
Ah, yes, IFRS 17. That's causing some waves.
It is. For our listeners, IFRS 17 is a major global accounting standard that fundamentally changes how insurers calculate and report their financial results, particularly their insurance contract liabilities. Higher interest rates mean that the future payments an insurer expects to make for claims are worth less today when discounted back. This can actually make their liabilities appear smaller on the balance sheet and potentially boost reported profits in the short term. However, it also introduces significant volatility to reported earnings as interest rates fluctuate up and down. It requires careful management and understanding from investors. It's not necessarily real economic profit fluctuation. And third, currency fluctuations. As a pan-European insurer with significant operations now in the UK, Sweden, and Denmark, they're exposed to foreign exchange risk. The value of the pound, the Swedish krona, the Danish krone relative to the Norwegian krone matters. While they do actively hedge their investment portfolio to mitigate some of this risk, currency movements can still significantly affect the reported value of premiums earned and profits generated in their reporting currency, the Norwegian krone. It creates another layer of earnings volatility that's outside their direct control.
Okay, those are the big macro factors. But what about risks that are more specific to the insurance industry itself, or even particular challenges for Protector within that industry?
Right. There are definitely industry-specific pressures, too. The Nordic region, unfortunately, has experienced an increased frequency and severity of natural catastrophes in recent years. Think beyond just Storm Hans in 2023. There have been other floods, storms. These events lead to higher claims volatility for insurers operating there and put significant upward pressure on reinsurance costs for the entire industry. Reinsurers are getting nervous and charging more. This directly impacts underwriting profitability for primary insurers like Protector. Also, motor insurance profitability is a particularly challenged segment right across the industry, not just for Protector.
Why motor specifically?
It's due to sharply rising repair costs for increasingly complex vehicles. Think about all the sensors, cameras, sophisticated electronics in modern cars. They're expensive to fix, plus persistent general claims inflation for parts and labor. Protector's own Q1 2024 investor presentation explicitly stated their motor portfolio was behind target. They cited continued claims inflation and lagged effective actions, meaning their price increases hadn't fully caught up yet. They even went as far as to completely exit an unprofitable consumer motor pilot program in Sweden in 2023, which shows that even their disciplined model isn't immune to these broader industry pressures. But it also shows they are willing to make tough, decisive decisions to maintain their overall profitability and protect margins, even if it means sacrificing some premium volume in a troubled segment. They won't chase bad business.
This really raises an important question for anyone trying to get a holistic view. It sounds like a pretty complex web of risks, both external macro risks and internal industry or company-specific ones. Could you maybe give us a more comprehensive overview, sort of categorize the different types of risks Protector is exposed to?
Certainly. Thinking about risks systematically is crucial for understanding any insurer. Beyond what we've just discussed, we need to consider several broad categories of risk that impact their stability and their ability to protect capital and earnings. First, and most obviously, insurance risks. These are primary for any insurer. They consist mainly of underwriting risk, the risk that the premiums they charge are ultimately insufficient to cover the actual cost of claims and expenses, and a reserving risk, the risk that those prior year reserves set aside for future claims prove inadequate as claims develop over time. These core insurance risks are always amplified by factors like claims inflation and the increasing frequency and severity of large weather-related catastrophe events, which can cause significant unexpected swings in profitability. Then, investment and market risks. Given their higher-than-average allocation to equities and potentially some non-rated bonds compared to peers, Protector is exposed to significant market risk from swings in equity markets, which adds volatility to their earnings. They also face interest rate risk, which affects the value of their large fixed-income portfolio, especially if rates rise sharply. And credit risk, the risk that bond issuers default, or that their reinsurance partners fail to pay their share of large claims. Next up, strategic and competitive risks. A key risk, acknowledged even by the company itself in their reports, is the potential loss of their crucial cost advantage and that unique challenger culture as they grow larger and inevitably become more complex.
The risk of becoming like the incumbents they challenge?
Yeah, exactly. Maintaining underwriting discipline while rapidly scaling operations across multiple countries is a significant execution risk that demands constant management attention. If they lose that agility or cost edge, their core competitive advantage is seriously eroded. We also have regulatory and compliance risks. Operating across multiple jurisdictions, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, UK, Finland, soon France means navigating complex and constantly evolving regulatory landscapes. This includes stringent capital requirements under Solvency II, detailed financial reporting standards like IFRS 17, consumer protection rules, etc. Non-compliance can lead to hefty fines, operational restrictions, and significant reputational damage. And finally, technology and cybersecurity risks. While their in-house IT model is a major strength, it also concentrates technology risk internally. A major failure of these core systems, perhaps due to a software bug, a failed upgrade, or an infrastructure issue, could severely disrupt operations. Or, perhaps even more worryingly, a significant cybersecurity breach that compromises sensitive customer data or operational integrity could have severe financial and reputational consequences, especially given how central technology is to their cost advantage, efficiency, and broker relationships.
Okay, so we've looked at the financials, the growth, the risks. But beyond the headline financial results, what other key performance indicators, or KPIs, offer a deeper view into Protector's day-to-day operational effectiveness? For you, the listener, who wants to understand how a company truly performs operationally, beyond just the profit number, what should we be looking at?
That's a great point. What's fascinating here is seeing how their stated strategy of cost and quality leadership actually translates into tangible operational excellence. It's about how they deliver on that promise every day. One really key indicator is customer retention. While they don't disclose a specific churn metric like some companies do, their reported renewal rate of 104% in 2023 is an incredibly strong proxy for excellent customer retention.
104%? How could it be over 100?
Good question. It means they not only retain virtually all their existing client base by premium volume, but they actually grew the total premium value from those retained clients year over year. This could be through price increases on renewal, clients buying additional coverages, or maybe expanding the scope of their policies. This is particularly impressive in a market where general churn rates are reportedly at an all-time high across the industry. It clearly reflects the success of their focus on quality service and those strong, long-standing broker relationships we discussed. It's a sign of a very sticky business model. Customers aren't leaving. Another important area is claims handling efficiency. Their in-house claims model and their clean desk paradigm, that's their internal term for streamlining the process, aren't just buzzwords. They represent a fundamental commitment to both efficiency and customer satisfaction. Imagine a claim coming in, instead of being shuffled between different departments or outsourced to a third party. A dedicated internal team often handles it from start to finish, minimizing handoffs, delays, and potential friction. This speeds up resolution for the client. That's the quality leadership part we discussed, which improves satisfaction. And crucially, it allows Protector to tightly control claims, costs, the cost leadership part, often by proactively managing repairs and settlements directly with suppliers and claimants. Moreover, their increasing focus on sustainability within the claims process is interesting. For instance, promoting repair over replacement for things like auto glass, actively using their supplier relationships to encourage the use of recycled parts, using climate-friendly building materials for property repairs. This isn't just greenwashing for the annual report. It directly reduces claims costs in many cases. So it aligns their environmental goals with their core cost leadership strategy and further helps protect their margins. Smart.
Right. Doing well by doing good, essentially.
I should say that. And finally, employee productivity and culture. You can infer employee productivity by looking at gross written premium per employee. That shows a powerful positive trend, increasing from approximately NOK 16.6 million per employee in 2022 to NOK 21.4 million in 2023.
That's a big jump in efficiency.
It indicates a highly efficient workforce where each employee is generating significantly more premium revenue. And this efficiency seems supported by a remarkably strong corporate culture. They report high employee satisfaction scores, 78.6 out of 100 in their 2024 survey, and a very low absence rate due to illness at just 2.5% in 2024, which is often a sign of good morale and engagement. This indicates a highly engaged, motivated, and effective workforce, which is absolutely crucial for maintaining their challenger mindset, their agility, and their ability to consistently execute on both cost and quality leadership. Culture matters. #TagTagTag framework for valuation.
Okay, let's pivot now to valuation. This is often the bottom line for investors. Protector Forsikring consistently trades at a significant premium compared to its Nordic and European insurance peers. So for you, the listener, who might be looking at this company through an investment lens, you might be wondering, why the high price tag? What's the market's justification for this higher valuation? It looks expensive on some metrics.
Understanding this premium valuation is absolutely central to any investment analysis or valuation exercise for Protector. It's the key question. While we're obviously not setting a price target or giving investment advice here, we can certainly provide a framework for understanding why the market values Protector the way it does. If we compare Protector to well-known peers like Trigg or Sampo, you'll see a really stark difference, particularly in their price-to-book PB ratios. Now, for our listeners, price-to-book compares a company's total market value, its share price times shares outstanding, to its accounting book value, or its net asset value per share. Protector's PB ratio has expanded significantly in recent years. It went from around 1.61 at year-end 2020 to a current TTM, trailing 12 months, multiple of about 6.43.
Wow, over 6 times book value.
Yeah, that's very high for an insurer. This is substantially higher than Trigg, which trades at approximately 2.7x PB, and much, much higher than the broader European P&C insurance industry average, which is typically well below 2.0x book value. Interestingly, their price-to-earnings, PE ratio, which compares market value to annual earnings, is more in line with peers. It's been trading around 18-20 at TTM earnings recently. This divergence between the very high PB and the more normal PE tells an important story about how the market perceives Protector.
So why is the market willing to pay such a high premium, especially on that price-to-book basis, when it often values other insurers much, much lower relative to their assets? What's the logic?
This significant premium valuation, particularly the high PB multiple, is a direct mathematical function of the company's superior and crucially sustained return on equity, ROE, that we discussed earlier. From a fundamental valuation perspective, a high PB multiple is perfectly justifiable if the corresponding ROE is also sustainably high and the market expects it to remain high.
Ah, the ROE connection again.
Exactly. Protector's ROE has been consistently exceptional, averaging around 23% over the last 5 years, hitting that incredible 37.7% in 2023. In stark contrast, peers like Trigg typically generate much lower ROEs, maybe around 12.9% historically. And consequently, they command much lower PB multiples. There's a direct link. The market is effectively pricing Protector as a superior compounder of capital. It recognizes its consistent ability to generate exceptionally high profits from its capital base year after year. Investors are paying that premium PB multiple because they believe this capital will continue to generate those outsized returns well into the future, driving rapid growth in both earnings per share and book value per share over time. They're paying for future compounding.
Okay, that makes sense. But what's the risk to this premium valuation then? If someone were trying to build a bear case against Protector, arguing it's overvalued, what would be the core arguments? What could justify a lower valuation multiple?
The primary risk, and indeed the core of the bear case argument, is that this superior ROE proves not to be sustainable, that it eventually erodes over time, perhaps reverting closer to the industry average as the company matures or competition intensifies. Any significant stumble in their performance or any sign that this exceptional profitability is starting to fade could lead to a rapid and potentially quite significant price-to-book multiple compression. The higher the starting multiple, the harder the fall. What could cause such a mean reversion in ROE? Potential catalysts include intensifying competition that severely compresses their underwriting margins, forcing them to price less attractively, or the company becoming too large, too bureaucratic, and consequently losing its crucial cost advantage and agility that's a stated strategic risk they themselves acknowledge. The growing pains risk.
Becoming a victim of its own success.
Potentially. Another factor could be if they're forced to deploy their rapidly growing capital base into lower return ventures or markets simply to maintain their high historical growth rate, which would naturally dilute their overall blended ROE. Therefore, the entire valuation debate for Protector really hinges critically on the perceived durability and sustainability of its exceptionally high ROE and its ongoing ability to protect those underwriting margins over the long term. How long can they keep this up? That's the million-dollar question, or rather the multi-billion krona question.
And one final point on valuation. What about the quality of their book value itself? Mm-hmm. We know PB relies on that number. How reliable are those book value figures that form the basis of the ratio? Are there any major uncertainties there?
That's a crucial question. The quality and reliability of an insurer's reported book value is absolutely paramount. It forms the basis of regulatory capital, solvency calculations, and key valuation metrics like PB. For Protector, as with essentially all insurers, the primary areas of estimation uncertainty lie in two main places. First, its insurance contract liabilities. That is, the money set aside today on the balance sheet to pay for future claims, often claims that haven't even been reported yet. IBNR incurred, but not reported. And second, the fair value measurement of less liquid financial assets that might be held within their investment portfolio. The company's own annual report explicitly acknowledges that the calculation of liabilities for incurred claims is, quote, always subject to significant uncertainty. This uncertainty is especially high for complex long-tail lines of business like liability insurance, where claims can take many, many years to fully settle, and their ultimate cost is genuinely hard to predict accurately upfront. Think about asbestos claims, for example.
Right. Huge uncertainty there.
Exactly. And auditors, in their independent reviews, have consistently highlighted both these areas, insurance contract liabilities and the valuation of certain financial assets, as key audit matters. Why? Because of the significant judgment and estimation involved in arriving at those numbers. This implies that while the reported book value is prepared in accordance with IFRS accounting standards and is audited, it does inherently contain material estimates that, by their very nature, could be subject to future revision, either up or down, as more information becomes available over time, or as actuarial assumptions, like inflation or discount rates, change. This means investors need to factor in this inherent estimation risk when evaluating the quality and perceived permanence of that reported book value number. It's not quite as solid as, say, the value of cash in the bank. Hashtag check management and corporate governance.
Okay, let's shift focus slightly for our final section and look at the people behind the strategy. Leadership is always key. What kind of leadership and corporate governance structure does Protector Force Sikring have? Is the management team stable, experienced, and importantly, are they aligned with shareholder interests?
Protector's impressive success story has certainly been steered by an experienced and notably long-tenured management team. They have a strong track record of executing the company's ambitious growth strategy effectively. The CEO, Henrik Høye, for instance, has been with the company since way back in 2007. He held various important roles, including leading their very successful expansion into the UK market, before his appointment as CEO in 2021. So, deep internal knowledge. The broader executive team also generally possesses deep insurance industry experience and significant tenure within Protector itself. This fosters valuable institutional knowledge, cultural continuity, and consistency in strategic direction. It's not a revolving door at the top. Their corporate governance structure adheres to the Norwegian Code of Practice for Corporate Governance. This includes having a board with a majority of independent directors, providing external oversight. And they have established the standard board committees you expect for audit, risk management, and remuneration, ensuring proper checks and balances. This kind of stability and experience at the top is a valuable intangible asset, especially for a challenger company that needs strong, consistent guidance to navigate growth and competition.
And crucially, are their interests truly aligned with those of us, the shareholders? Because that's a key factor in driving long-term value creation, ensuring management is working for the owners.
Shareholder alignment appears to be a strong point for Protector, yes. It's fostered primarily through significant insider ownership. Senior executives and board members collectively own approximately 3.0% of the company's outstanding shares as of year-end 2023.
3% is quite meaningful for insiders.
It is. It's a meaningful stake that means their personal wealth is directly tied to the company's long-term performance and share price. They have skin in the game. Furthermore, executive compensation includes a significant performance-based component. This is typically capped at 100% of fixed salary, explicitly linking a portion of their pay to the company's success, specifically metrics like profitability, like ROE, and solvency strength. The cap also aims to avoid incentivizing excessive risk-taking just to chase short-term bonus targets. They also maintain what appears to be a high standard of communication and transparency with investors. Through detailed annual reports, comprehensive quarterly presentations, regular capital markets days, and other readily accessible disclosures, this helps build trust and allows investors to monitor their progress and strategy closely. Good alignment seems to be a priority. #tech-synthesis and strategic outlook.
So, okay, we've covered a huge amount of ground today. Strategy, financials, risks, valuation, management. Let's try and bring all these pieces together now. What's the big picture for Protector Force Sikring as we look ahead? What's the overall strategic outlook for this challenger?
Mm-hmm. Protector Force Sikring has undeniably established itself as a formidable and highly successful challenger in the Nordic and UK insurance markets. No question about that. Its business model, predicated on that disciplined dual focus of cost and quality leadership, has proven to be both highly profitable and remarkably scalable. The company seems strategically well-positioned to capitalize on key long-term industry trends, like the ongoing digitalization of insurance processes, where its modern in-house IT provides a distinct and likely durable advantage over slower incumbents. Looking ahead, future growth is expected to be driven by two main engines. First, continued market share gains in its existing geographies, simply by consistently winning profitable business away from less efficient competitors using their proven model. And second, a disciplined strategic entry into new large European markets, starting with France in 2025, replicating that successful playbook again. Their demonstrated ability to protect margins, even in a challenging hardening market, by leveraging their cost advantage and maintaining strict underwriting disciplines, is absolutely central to this positive outlook.
Okay, so for our listeners who might be considering this as an investment or just analyzing it as a business case study, what does the bull case look like for Protector? What are the strongest arguments in its favor going forward?
The bull case, in a nutshell, centers on the argument that Protector is fundamentally a superior underwriting business, one with a durable structural cost advantage, allowing it to consistently generate high-margin, profitable growth for the foreseeable future. The Challenger model isn't just theory. It's proven effective and highly portable, as clearly evidenced by its significant success in the competitive UK market. This portability offers a potentially long runway for future growth as it continues to take market share from larger, less efficient incumbents across Europe. There is still plenty of market share to gain. Its industry-leading return on equity, if sustained, will allow it to compound shareholder value at an accelerated rate over time, thereby justifying its current premium valuation. This is all supported by that disciplined capital management framework we discussed, ensuring excess capital generated is efficiently returned to shareholders through dividends and buybacks. So, the bull case sees it as an attractive long-term compounder that can thrive even in a challenging, hardening market by protecting its superior profitability.
And what about the bear case, the arguments against it, the major risks or concerns that could derail this positive growth story? Every investment thesis has a flip side.
Absolutely. The bear case primarily focuses on the significant risks stemming from the company's high starting valuation, particularly that very high price-to-book multiple. As we discussed, this leaves very little room for execution error or disappointment. The market expects near perfection. Any stumble in performance or any sign that its superior profitability is starting to revert towards the industry average mean reversion could lead to significant PB multiple compression, causing substantial downside for the share price, even if the underlying business remains decent. Furthermore, maintaining that strict underwriting discipline and preserving the unique, agile challenger culture becomes exponentially more difficult as the company scales rapidly in size and geographic complexity. Bureaucracy can creep in.
The big company problem.
Exactly. The more aggressive investment strategy also introduces higher potential earnings volatility compared to more conservative peers, which some investors might dislike. And finally, it faces those intensifying industry headwinds we talked about: persistent claims inflation, the increasing impact of climate change on catastrophe losses, which could erode underwriting margins across the board over the long term, potentially impacting even Protector's ability to maintain that crucial high ROE. The challenge will be to continuously protect margins as these headwinds persist and potentially strengthen in the coming years. #outro.
Wow, what an incredible deep dive into the challenger of the European insurance world. It's clear, Protector Forsikring presents a really compelling and perhaps quite unique story. A high-quality, high-growth insurer with a truly distinct business model, a sharp competitive edge built on efficiency and tech, and an experienced, aligned management team. And they've delivered exceptional financial results to back it up, including best-in-class profitability and rapid, entirely organic growth.
Indeed. The primary debate for you, the listener, and certainly for investors trying to assess the company, is whether this truly exceptional historical performance is genuinely sustainable as the company inevitably increases in scale and complexity. And as it continues to face those persistent industry headwinds, particularly the ongoing challenge of protecting its superior margins in a hardening inflationary market, and then whether its current premium valuation adequately discounts the inherent risks associated with future growth execution and that potential for eventual margin compression, it's a fascinating balance to strike, and the market is clearly betting on sustainability right now.
So, what does this all mean for you? Whether you're an investor, a business leader, or just a curious mind tuning in, it leaves us with a provocative thought, perhaps. In an era where disruption is often exclusively associated with Silicon Valley tech startups and flashy apps, Protector Forsikring shows us that even mature, traditional, seemingly boring industries like insurance can be fundamentally reshaped. It's not always about inventing something entirely new from scratch. Sometimes it's about a relentless, disciplined focus on operational efficiency, on agility, enabled by modern technology, and maintaining a clear challenger mindset that constantly questions the established status quo. Could their blueprint for disrupting a legacy industry, that powerful dual focus on cost and quality, leveraged by smart in-house tech and strategic niche market plays, be applied effectively to other sectors you might be following, or perhaps even be a part of yourself? Something to think about. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We hope you feel much more informed and perhaps a little more curious about the challengers out there in whatever industry they may be. We'll catch you next time.